A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, the last of the Secret Wars Saturdays or Secret Wars Saturdays focusing on Secret Wars 2 anyway. For those not familiar with the chronology and why we've been talking about Secret Wars, I'll give a quick recap. I really wanted to get back into reading Marvel, especially when the Secret Wars event came out. It's been 3 years now since it started coming out in 2015. And this was the Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars. And I really hadn't read much Marvel in depth since like Civil War, the first Civil War came out. So I didn't even know, it had been so long, I didn't even know where to start. And then with the delays for Hickman's Secret Wars and the delays of the, I can't even remember, what was it? The all new, all different Marvel? Anyway, I can't remember what initiative. They used some of them multiple times. But anyway, I started doing some research, said, okay, if I need to read this, what do I need to know ahead of time? And it was written by Jonathan Hickman. And everything I read online talked about the fact that pretty much all of Hickman's Marvel work from the very beginning was all connected and leading up to that Secret Wars event. And so I thought, well, I guess I'll go back and I'll read like all of that, right? Like I'll read the whole, all of Hickman's work. And so I looked for a reading order. I came across a site called the Comic Book Herald, and it had a Secret Wars reading order for Hickman stuff, but it went back even farther than that. It went back to Secret Wars 2 and even the first Secret Wars, and even back further to the books that tied in and were kind of prologues to the Secret Wars. And I thought, well, you know what? It's been a really, really long time since I've read the original Secret Wars. So let me go ahead and just dive into this reading order, and it'll eventually bring me up to the most recent Secret Wars. Obviously, that's going to take a long time. I have managed to start to catch up with the Marvel Universe just by doing what I did when I was a kid and I first started reading comics, which is just diving in. Sometimes you just have to take the plunge. So I've been reading a lot of X-Men stuff lately and Hulk. Haven't jumped back onto the Avengers too much. Haven't gotten into Dan Slott's Iron Man too much, but been reading Spider-Man and a lot of the classic titles. So yeah, it's been a good experience, and I do still want to finish this chronology. But we've been reading Secret Wars for a really long time now, and I'm kind of ready for a change. That being said, a lot of this Secret Wars 2 material I had already read, and obviously I had read all the Secret Wars, the first Secret Wars, I'd read all that stuff. So coming up next in the chronology that the Comic Book Herald put together, there is a Secret Wars 3, which is just some Fantastic Four episodes that kind of tell another story of the Beyonder. So I'm going to go ahead and cover those. I think it's issues 318 and 319 of Fantastic Four, and then annual 23, and then issue 351. So I'm going to cover those four books. And then before I continue with the Secret Wars reading order, because the next area or the next section of that chronology so heavily features Thanos, I thought, you know, Thanos has been one of my favorite characters since I read The Death of Captain Marvel way, way, way back in, I don't know, 83, I think it came out. Thanos has always been one of my favorite characters, and now he's a lot of people's favorite character. He's shown up a lot more in the last 10 or 15 years. Probably 10 years or so, you know, with the Infinity Gauntlet by Jim Starlin, that kind of put him back on the map. And that's been 20 years now, but he's gradually increased in popularity to the point where, you know, he shows up in the Avengers Infinity movie, and he's known to millions of people worldwide. So I thought, you know, before I continue on this reading order that Comic Book Herald put together, it would be fun to do a Thanos retrospective. Let's go back and look at Thanos' history and get caught up on Thanos. I think it's a good time to kind of change things up. We'll get back to the Secret Wars reading order eventually, but I do want to do some Thanos. So look for that coming up soon. As I said, I'm going to do those four issues of the Secret Wars 3 first. So let me take a quick look at the schedule here. And it looks like, so yeah, the Thanos, we'll start with Thanos Rising, and I'll put details of this in the show notes when it starts getting closer. And I'll talk to you guys more about it, where you can find the Thanos reading order that I'm going to use and all that kind of stuff. So it looks like the 4 weeks of October, the 4 Saturdays of October, will be Secret Wars 3. So Secret Wars Saturday will continue for one more month with Secret Wars 3, that same read and order. Links in the show notes. Comic Book Herald, props to him for putting this together. And then in November, we'll shift to Thanos for a while. And then eventually we'll come back to this. So that's kind of where we are with the Marvel chronology. Also, I'll mention that I'm still planning on doing the X-Men chronology. It's probably going to come out on Fridays. I'm just finalizing guest appearances for the first episode and finding the right reading order for that. So look for that. Look for an announcement on that in the next couple of weeks. So I think that's it for sort of the house cleaning aspect of it. Let me go ahead and dive into the first book we're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about for this episode. It's New Mutants 38. It's written by Chris Claremont. We've got pencils in this issue by Rick Leonardi, guest artist, and inks by Bill Sienkiewicz. And you can really tell it's Sienkiewicz here doing the inks. It looks like Sienkiewicz art. It doesn't look like Rick Leonardi art hardly at all. So I imagine it was more layouts or maybe even thumbnails by Leonardi, and Sienkiewicz really puts his mark on it. So it starts off with a dream that Magneto is having, and apparently he himself is not having this dream. It's actually the New Mutants who are having this dream, but they're projecting it so strongly, this nightmare, that Magneto's picking up on it. And the dream is one where they're attacked by Sentinels. And as they're fighting off the Sentinels, White Queen shows up with her Hellions, and they're attacked by the Hellions as well. And just as they're about to be overwhelmed, all of a sudden, instead of being on this nondescript plane of existence where they're fighting the Sentinels and the Hellions, all of a sudden they're in the front yard of the X mansion with Magneto in an upstairs window telling them, hey, that's enough for today, it's time for bed. And Magneto wakes up and he feels... instead of walking into the mansion, the New Mutants all get out of their costumes. They all have regular clothes on underneath, and instead of going inside and going to bed, they walk over to graves, and they crawl inside the graves, cover themselves up with dirt, and say goodnight. So clearly a lot here to do with having been killed by the Beyonder, erased from existence, then resurrected, being kind of zombies and pawns when they are resurrected. All this is still resonating in their minds. So Magneto wakes up the next morning. He's talking about how tired he is. He's talking to Sharon, who's the school nurse. And she's like, yeah, I can sense it too. Clearly there's something going on with the kids and yourself, and they're not getting any rest and they don't feel like themselves. And we actually just got a letter from the White Queen, and she's asking how everyone is. You think there's a connection? And Magneto says it's possible. You know, she's a telepath. These nightmares that the kids are putting out are so strong, she easily could be sensing them, even though she's hundreds of miles away. And so they're kind of speculating on what they should do. And then the kids walk in for breakfast, and they're all lethargic, and they're all downcast and looking down. It's a very somber mood, and none of them want to eat, none of them are hungry. And Magneto is thinking to himself that he doesn't know how to handle this, and he wishes Xavier was there. He's doubting Xavier's choice in leaving him in charge of the school, and he's just not sure what he should do. So he goes into his study, he's pouring himself a drink, when all of a sudden a match is lit from his belt buckle. So clearly the White Queen, using her telekinesis, scraped a wooden match against his belt buckle and lit it, and then she grabs it out of the air with her hands, and Magneto's shocked to see her there and says, what do you want, woman? And she says, if my intentions were hostile, Magneto, you'd be dead. And so she says that she understands what he's going through. He looks terrible, and the psychic cries of the students have been so strong, it's been taking her effort to screen them out so they don't affect her students at the Massachusetts Academy, and she offers to help. She says, I believe I can change that. And Magneto says, why should I trust you? She says, well, you don't really have a choice, first of all. And although in the past, Charles and I were rivals, this isn't about us. This is about the children. And their need is desperate, and I can help them if you would like. And Magneto says, okay, how can you help them? And she says, well, I will allow them to come to the Massachusetts Academy, and I won't pressure them to join the Hellfire Club. I'll simply remove their pain and give them an opportunity to deserve and enjoy a normal life. And Magneto's just taken aback. He said, that would be an abomination. And the White Queen says, you think you can do better? Can you do anything at all? You know, don't let your pride be the reason that the New Mutants die, that you sacrifice them on the altar of your pride. Because the fact of the matter is you're trying, but you're failing. So Magneto tells her to leave, and she agrees for now. Meanwhile, the next morning, Magneto runs Cannonball through the Danger Room, and he fails pretty miserably. He's not able to perform even up to the standards that he used to be able to. And when Magneto scolds him, again, the attitude is one that he just doesn't care. He says, I'm sorry. And Magneto says, is that all you have to say? Yes. Is there something wrong? I want to help. Nope, I'm fine. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, they're still like robots. They're still zombies. They're not all there. And so Magneto again implores him to ask for guidance, to ask for help. He says, open your eyes. Don't you see what's happening? Doesn't that concern you? Don't you care? And Sam says, nope. So Magneto says, well, go run 5 kilometers on the track and then meet me in the classroom, because your academic work has suffered just as poorly as this Danger Room training. So again, Magneto finds himself frustrated, and he's even beating himself up for losing his temper with Sam. But he's at the end of his rope. He doesn't know what to do. So as he's moving through the school, he comes across a dance class with the girls of the New Mutants, and they're Stevie Hunter, longtime X-Men supporting character, is teaching the class, and Magneto observes for a while. The girls dance terribly, and when she asks them to concentrate and do better, it's even worse. So Magneto again loses his temper, steps into the class and says, if Miss Hunter or I teach you anything, you do it to the best of your ability. Now do it again, and this time do it properly. And Ileana says, who needs it? Who cares? I'll be back when I feel like it. And she leaves for Limbo. And the rest of them do the dance again, but it's just as lame as ever. And Stevie Hunter is upset at Magneto and says, are you satisfied? This is my class, Magneto. If you have no objections, I'd like to finish it without any more of your idiot interference. Because she knows that's not, yelling at these students is not how you're going to reach them. So meanwhile, out in the carriage house, we see Danny Moonstar and Brightwind, her flying horse. And Danny might be the one who's still able to feel. She has that connection with Brightwind, which helps to ground her and bring her back to reality. And she seems to be much less affected by whatever's harming the other students. And also, she was the one that had the visions ahead of time that the other mutants were going to die. And she was the last one to be killed by the Beyonder. So seems like she hung on to a lot more of herself than the rest of them did. And so she's pretty depressed about the whole thing. And she's kind of wallowing in self-pity when all of a sudden a frog appears. And it turns out this frog is Thor. As we saw at the end of Thor 363, Thor was kissed by a woman who was placed under a spell by Loki, and it turned him into a frog. And for some reason, he shows up here. I don't know if it's a vision, if Danny's just having a vision, or if he's actually there momentarily. But he kind of gives her a pep talk and says, don't despair. Don't wallow in your despair. You know, you have a gift that's great and it's unique, and do your best to triumph over that. And so Danny realizes, as this frog is talking to her, because she does have like the gift of true sight, that it's Thor. And she tries to ask him if he needs help and go to him, but Brightwind blocks her as Thor hops away. And Danny's like, I need to help him. What are you doing? Get out of the way. And then she stops and hugs Brightwind and says, oh, I get it. Thor didn't come here because he needs me. I actually need him, right? I didn't need him. Or he didn't need me at all, half so much as I needed him, and it worked. You know, I'm still hurt, but I'm feeling better, more like my old self, and I wish I could say the same for the rest of the gang. So later the following weekend, Magneto takes the kids to a school dance at a local high school, hoping that being around other kids of their own age would kind of snap them out of their funk. But unfortunately, it's only made them feel like more of an outcast, and they pretty much keep to themselves while Magneto meets the principal of one of the other high schools. And we learn that Charles had put a kind of a cover into place. He's Michael, the older brother, and everybody knows Charles is on leave. And Magneto tells this woman, Annalie is her name, that he's not sure when his brother will be back. And we also find out that Danny's going to be heading home soon to go visit her parents, and she might not be coming back. Now, whether that's because of recent events or because of her feeling the only one that's even able to feel and feeling disconnected from her teammates, we're not really sure. So later that night, the dreams come again, and Magneto's trying to stay awake and figure out what to do. He wonders if Danny will return, and if she does return, she may find that she's the only student there, or even worse, that the school is gone. There's no school left. And Magneto thinks about the old days when he could physically submit somebody to do his bidding, like he did with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but he's a better man now, and he's got to find a better way. And then he goes to sit in his chair, and it turns out his chair is a Warlock. And Warlock is not affected the same way the rest of the New Mutants, sorry, but he's not exactly human. Doesn't have emotions the way the others do. So, but he does ask for Magneto's advice because he does know that there's something wrong. And Magneto says, you know, I have none to give. I'm as lost as you are. So meanwhile, Cypher's parents have showed up, and they're very concerned about what's been going on at the school. And they're there to take Cypher with them. Cypher's father's actually the school's attorney, and so he actually knows the truth about who Magneto is. And Cypher's father says, you know, I trust Xavier's judgment, but something's terrible is going on with our son, and we just want it to stop before it gets any worse. So we're gonna take him with us. So meanwhile, we find out that Empath from the Hellions is spying, and he's found by Sharon and the groundskeeper Tom as they're out for a walk, and they confront him, and it's clear that Empath has been behind this malaise that the New Mutants feel, and they may be blaming it on their recent interactions with the Beyonder. And I'm sure that has something to do with it, the fact that they were, you know, killed and then resurrected. But Empath seems to have more to do with it than anything. And so as Tom and Sharon threaten to take Empath inside to meet Magneto and confront him about why he's trespassing on the property, Empath uses his abilities to make Tom and Sharon feel intense attraction to each other. And they start making out, basically, to the point where the rest of the world ceases to exist and they'll forget that they even saw Empath. So meanwhile, the next day, Magneto has called the White Queen, and he has decided that he's unable to solve this problem, and he's going to allow the New Mutants to transfer to the Massachusetts Academy. And it ends on somewhat of a cliffhanger, with Magneto feeling like he failed Charles Xavier, and Danny Moonstar obviously disagrees with this decision. She says she's not going to go, and White Queen just says, I'm sorry to hear that. So it looks like Magma, Cannonball, Wolfsbane, Karma, and Cypher Although I thought Cypher had left with his parents, but perhaps not. But anyway, at least those five are going to be headed over to the Massachusetts Academy. So I'll talk about the art first. The art's a little strange because it's not full Bill Sienkiewicz. It doesn't quite look like his art because of the Leonardo layouts on it. So I don't know. It doesn't have quite the abstract energy that Sienkiewicz's art has. So I just feel like these two guys are not, their art styles don't complement each other. So the art in this issue is just not, it's not up to the usual standard of New Mutants for this time. Now, I'm not a big fan of Sienkiewicz doing sequentials. I think his art is best served and most impactful when he does covers and things like that. So I wasn't a big fan of his art, Sienkiewicz's art in New Mutants anyway. But his art is on his own is better than what this looks. And it's not that the art is bad. It doesn't flow. And like I said, it doesn't have that energy, that kinetic energy that Sienkiewicz usually has on his own. As far as, you know, inks and, I mean, Sienkiewicz did the inks. So, line weights and everything are fine. There's no issue there, but colors, I mean, it's an 80s comic on newsprint. So, I don't know that we can really say much about the colors. I mean, this is pre-computer coloring, so it's adequate, I guess you'd say. As far as the story itself, you know, there's not really much action in it. I almost feel like that sequence in the beginning where we see the New Mutants' dream is put in there just so that we would have some action in the story. Otherwise, it's all character and plot, which isn't a bad thing. But again, for me, I wasn't reading New Mutants back then because I didn't really care for the art that much, and I don't know. Claremont was really wordy, and I felt like the X-Men, the regular X-Men title, had more action than the New Mutants title. New Mutants just never grabbed me. So it's also interesting that the Comic Book Herald chose to put this in his reading order because it's not technically a crossover. And I mean, obviously, there's mention of what happened to the New Mutants, but I don't know. I thought it would cross over more, being that he put it in here, but then it doesn't have, as I said, official crossover status, so not sure why he put it in, but this is the state of the New Mutants, and if you want to read more, you're going to have to go track it down for yourself, because I'm not going to read the next issue and cover it on the podcast, so sorry about that. All right, the other issue I'm going to talk about is a crossover. It's actually considered an epilogue to Secret Wars, and it even says right on the top of the cover, 32 pages, no advertisements, special epilogue to Secret Wars 2. It's the Avengers 266 from the creative team of writer Roger Stern. We have John Buscema on breakdowns, Tom Palmer on finished art, and Jim Novak on letters. And this is all about that gash where the Rocky Mountains existed that happened when the Beyonder tried to defeat the heroes in Secret Wars 2, number 9. And basically it's ripping the earth apart because that gash exists and there's so much of the earth that's missing. It's throwing everything out of balance, out of whack. The earth is wobbling on its axis and it's threatening to break apart. And so the issue opens up with the Silver Surfer, and he's basically flying over that affected area, checking out the damage, and thinking to himself about how he had sensed for many weeks that there was some power nearly as great as his, or even dwarfing his, rather, on Earth, and it was eluding him whenever he would go to look for it. And so he knows now that it was the Beyonder. He was summoned there for the final battle, and knows that the Beyonder is supposedly dead, but the consequences are left, right? And the Earth has sustained what seems to him to be a mortal wound. So at that moment, Captain Marvel, the Monica Rambeau version, flies over, asks him for his help, and he agrees to follow her. And she explains a little bit what the Avengers have been doing in the meantime. And as they travel to go meet up with the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and the rest of the heroes that are trying to clean up the Beyonder's mess, he's asking, you know, I know little of this guy from beyond, so why don't you tell me why he was here. And so Captain Marvel gives a very brief recap about the heroes having been sent to Battleworld, and then the Beyonder coming to Earth, taking the form of Captain America, copying his body, attempting to become an Avenger, and then having somewhat of a messianic quest to try to figure out who he was, and that not really working out, and kind of how he lost it after that. And finally, the Avengers confronted him in the Rockies, which happened in Secret Wars 2, number 8, and then Avengers 265. And then she says, and you remember the rest, right? So the X-Men, New Mutants, Alpha Flight, Fantastic Four, West Coast Avengers, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Cloak and Dagger, Power Man, and Iron Fist, Spider-Man, Hulk, and you guys all got involved. And eventually we stopped the Beyonder. Unfortunately, he died, but not before causing this giant hole that's causing all these problems. So back near the rift, we see there's an earthquake, and a couple of the, well, Black Knight falls toward the Miles, falls for Miles, he's falling toward the magma that's exposed below, and Namor flies after him, manages to catch him, knows he won't be able to fly back up because of the heat. He's dehydrating, he's losing his powers very quickly, but he manages to hurl the Black Knight up out of the chasm where Hercules catches him, and then Mr. Fantastic is able to stretch down and grab Namor right before he falls into the lava. So they're hoping with Silver Surfer's cosmic power that he'll be able to help seal the rift. So as they're traveling toward the rift, the Surfer senses power, some energy nearby that seems almost familiar to him, but then it fades away, and he continues on his journey. And meanwhile, we see that the compound, the military hospital that was set up momentarily to help victims of this disaster, it's where Molecule Man and his girlfriend are, Marcia Rosenberg. And Molecule Man appears to be in a coma. So kind of assuming that that's where... or the energy, rather, that Silver Surfer sensed. So, meanwhile, Reed Richards has taken some equipment from the Army and created a geo-stress analyzer. And the news is actually better than it was before when he first analyzed it. It looked like the Earth had about an hour left before it basically crumbled apart. That's been extended to 6 hours. The mantle cracking seems to have slowed. And so Captain America's, all right, so we have some time. How do we fix it? Reed's like, I don't know. It's so far beyond anything that's in our abilities to fix. I just don't know where to start. Hercules is frustrated and picks up a giant boulder and says if the hole's the problem, then we'll just fill it. Like, I don't understand what's so hard about that. And Namor's like, we know he's senseless, but let him try and he'll see how useless his strength is. And Hercules loses his temper and says, I know you're right, but I want to help. And the fact of the matter is that it's not just a matter of filling the hole. There's a lot of damage that needs to be undone. So at that moment, the Silver Surfer appears there with Captain Marvel, and they talk about what needs to be done. And the Silver Surfer doubts that he has the enough power to replace millions of cubic miles of crust that have simply dissolved away, but he's going to try. And so he suggests that all the civilians withdraw from the area. And after a few minutes, they have the heroes remain behind, shielded by Invisible Woman. And Silver Surfer uses his power to an extent that none of these heroes certainly have ever seen before. He crackles with energy, and he starts to, after many, many moments, build a shaft of land across the chasm that starts to fill in this massive hole. But just as he completes the bridge to cover one spot, one end of the bridge begins to crack and falls apart. And he says it's no use. And so Reed Richards asks if he's all right, and he says, I just can't do it. I lack the power necessary to close the abyss, and any further attempts by me are just going to make it worse. And so the heroes are wondering if there's any hope, and Surfer says, there's none on this world who possess power enough to do this. Captain America says, that's not true. In the final battle with the Beyonder, we saw the Molecule Man go toe-to-toe with him, and he said that he was just only holding his own, but you know, when the Beyonder lashed out at us and would have killed us, Rhys was able to protect us too. And he even said that it was a good thing that he wasn't a hero to the point of sacrificing himself, because then he would have been exerting all his power to try to stop the Beyonder, and he wouldn't have had any power in reserve to shield all of them. But now there's something broken inside him badly, and that's why he's in the army hospital. And so Silver Surfer's like, is this true? Is there a being with this much power here? And so then the heroes talk about if they can trust the Molecule Man, can they force him to do what they need him to do? Seems like they really can. If he's really as powerful as you say he is, then we can't really force him to do anything. So they come up with a plan to ask Molecule Man if he'll help. Meanwhile, Molecule Man and Marsha are feeling a little paranoid in the army tent, and they're worried that they're going to be found out by the authorities, because remember, technically Molecule Man is still a villain at this point. He's still wanted by the authorities. So he turns the tent, the MASH tent that they're in, into a hot air balloon, basically. And Marsha turns into Volcana and uses her power to generate hot gas, and they fly off. And they're heading back to Denver. And so then Captain Marvel shows up to try to speak to them. And Marsha immediately attacks her. Because if you remember in Secret Wars number 8, she accidentally pulled open some wounds that Wolverine had given Molecule Man. And so Marsha's immediate reaction is to attack her. So Captain Marvel realizes it's futile to try to, for her to be the one to try to speak to them, and they retreat. So they're just not really sure what they can do, the heroes, that is, because Marsha and Owen are so paranoid. So what happens is Silver Surfer comes up with a plan to manipulate the wind in the upper atmosphere, which basically drives their balloon over to where the heroes are, to where the chasm is. And Marsha attacks them before they can finally calm her down and convince her that they don't mean the Molecule Man any harm. They just need him to help fix the planet. But the Molecule Man says the catastrophe already would have happened if I hadn't slowed it down. So it turns out that change that Reed sensed was the work of the Molecule Man. He says, even as I speak, I'm literally holding this planet together. And let me tell you, it's not easy given my condition. Because remember, he was wounded in the battle with the Beyonder. And he says, if I try to use any more energy, I might just tear up my insides even more and burn out my power completely, or even kill me. And Captain America says, I can't tell you to risk your life, but you do realize that if the Earth dies, you die too, and so do all your loved ones. So you're going to die either way. And Molecule Man says, nah, that's not true. I can construct an impenetrable survival capsule for Marsha and me, and we'll have everything we need, life support, food, water, and we can find a new world to settle on, or I might just make one. So why would I risk myself if that's the case? It's like, unless you think you're going to try to force me to cooperate, or even think of threatening Marsha. Captain Marvel says, no, that's not what we do. And the Wasp is like, are you really going to let the Earth die? Because you're going to lose out on so much. No more children playing, no more hide and seek, no more sunrises off Cape Cod. And Molecule Man says, oh, that's right, I would miss F Troop. So he's going to miss an old TV show. That's where he comes out. But he does think, well, if I try and fail, I won't have enough energy to create a capsule for Marsha and I to survive. But if I succeed, the effort may kill me or cripple me, or worse of all, burn out my powers. So I'm not really sure what I should do. And so he asked Marsha, well, what do you think? And she's like, I just, I don't know. I just know that you're important to me and I love you. And so Molecule Man says, you know, even for a cosmic being like me to start over in a new world would be a big pain in the butt. So, okay, I'll do it. And so he prepares himself for several hours. And then when the time is right, Silver Surfer stands behind him, puts his hands on Reese's shoulders, lends him his cosmic power, and the Molecule Man is able to repair the damage. But once that's done, in a blinding flash and a big kraboom, we find out that the Molecule Man has burned himself out of his powers, and he has the Silver Surfer take him and Marcia home. Captain America agrees to let the authorities know that Molecule Man just saved the world, and hopefully that'll be enough for them to go looking for them, for him. And so back at the apartment, we find out of the apartment of Owen and Marcia, we find out that Molecule Man actually, not only did he fix the damage to the crust of the earth, he also fixed the damage to Owen and Marcia's apartment. He's like, and I fixed some other stuff too, like the X-Men's mansion, and some of the damage done by the earthquakes caused in San Francisco, and some other things. And Marcia's like, well, I thought you were burning your power out. And come to find out, he still has his powers. And Molecule Man thanks Silver Surfer for keeping that secret. And he says basically that he wanted to fool the rest of the heroes, because if they knew he was still Molecule Man, they would constantly be worried about what he was up to. And now he could just live a nice, normal life and not have to worry about being harassed or asked to come and help at the first sign of any catastrophe. So the Surfer says, you know, I lost my freedom of the cosmos in defending this planet, and you risked everything you had to save it. So you deserve to keep your life and your love, and you're a lucky man, Owen Reese. And may we one day all know such kindness. And that ends the story. So it gives us closure for Molecule Man, if nothing else. Obviously, it's not the end of his story. We've seen him show up even in the most recent relaunch of Fantastic Four. But this does give us some closure, does give us some cleanup. Again, I don't know that it was totally necessary, but I did appreciate it. And, you know, we've talked about the art for Avengers in this period of time, how absolutely amazing it is. John Buscema, a complete master. So it's very regal. It has a certain feel. It very much feels Avengers-y, not that that's a word. And again, the art is top-notch. So not much Beyonder in this one. And the Molecule Man seems to be still on his journey, still evolving as a character. But I did find it interesting. I hadn't actually read this. I didn't even know that Avengers 266 was an epilogue to Secret Wars 2, number 9. I think I read number 9 and was like, oh, glad that's finally over. And I never went back and investigated. And I think I was picking up Avengers pretty sporadically at this point, just an issue here or there. So anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next convention I'll be at is New York Comic Con, 1 week from today. I'll actually be there Thursday through Sunday, first weekend in October. So if you're going to be there at the show, please reach out to me on social media. Let me know. I always love to meet up with listeners and grab a quick selfie and talk some comics and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.